Last week, it was unintentional, but Glenn told us, he said, boy, you left us on a cliffhanger. And I did not realize that because I intended to cover more material, but we ran out of time. So I left it of Luke 10, verse 17. So I guess we will get the exciting conclusion to this cliffhanger of last week. So I thought we'd cover these four verses before we sing. And that is kind of completing a couple of thoughts here. And there are several things. But Luke chapter 10, verse 17, Jesus commissioned the 70 disciples, that were 70 people other than the 12, to he gave them miraculous powers, and they even had some powers that they did not even realize that they had, which was casting out demons. And that's why they come back to Jesus and they're shocked. Even the demons are subject to your name. But anyway, he sends them out two by two, and the wording and all of the instructions that he gave them were essentially identical to what he had told the 12. And very likely, this is the best explanation of where the man from chapter 9 came from that was casting out demons. And the apostles forbade him and told him not to do that. But Jesus said, he who is not against us is for us. And so, obviously, that the best explanation, he's one of these 70, or there were even more people that Jesus commissioned and gave the ability to cast out demons than just these, which is evident from 2 Corinthians, when there are 500 people that then see Jesus after his resurrection, before his ascension. So there were, Jesus had more going on than we get a more narrow view in these accounts of the gospel. Jesus was broader than that. Even John, at the end of the book of John, the Gospel of John, refers to this by saying that he supposes that if everything that Jesus ever did was written down, the books of the world would not be able to hold it. So, Jesus was constantly busy and he cast a broad net. Okay, so Luke 10, verse 17. Then the 70 returned with joy, saying, Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name. And Jesus said to them, I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. Now, what comes to my mind, but obviously did not come to the commentator's mind, and the only thing that I would have thought about is when when God originally created the heavenly beings, he obviously gave them, as he gave us, a free will, a freedom to choose right and wrong. Did not make them like robots, just like he didn't make us as robots and program us to where we didn't have our own thinking. He gave these angels and heavenly beings the ability to have their own free thought and choose good from evil. Unfortunately, Satan and a group of other angels that become demons, or also become referred to as demons, chose wrong. As many humans today, as most humans, chose incorrectly. And then God cast Satan out of heaven. So to me, that is what he's talking about here. Jesus is recounting that he saw Satan fall like lightning out of heaven when God cast him out, because God could not have any wickedness, unrighteousness, evilness in heaven. Okay, now, Kaufman had two other thoughts. He didn't have this thought at all, that's what he's referring to. He didn't even mention that, which to me, that's the only most obvious. Now, the ones two he comes up with are not obvious at all to me, but this is what he said. He said this is both reminiscent of the past. He's given us a flashback. Also, he's prophesying the future. So the reminiscent of the past was what happened in the neighborhood of about 3 years before this time, when Satan tempted Jesus three times after Jesus had been baptized. And so when Jesus defeated Satan, Kaufman said, this is what Jesus is referring to, that Satan fell like lightning from heaven. Okay. Then the second time he said that this is referring to in the future. It's not far in the future. It's only going to be about 6 months in the future. Is when Jesus is going to deal the fatal head wound, the fatal head blow to Satan whenever he completes the sin sacrifice for mankind. And that's the fatal death blow. Because without that, Satan is the winner, but with this, Satan is a loser and has no chance of winning, because there is always a way of salvation for mankind. So, and then this would, that also completed the prophecy of that we get from Genesis, that Satan would bruise the Messiah's heel, but then the Messiah would bruise Satan's head. So that would be the completion of that prophecy too. So that's what Kaufman referred to, those two things, and I never would have thought of that. And I still like my thought better, that this is when the time that God cast Satan out of heaven and he fell like lightning. Okay, verse. Any questions or comments on that? Verse 19, behold, I give you authority. Now, he's talking to these 70, you know, and this is all in the context that they are shocked that they're able to cast Satan out, cast the demons out. And so, in addition to this, he has given them authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you. Okay. So, he said there's many other things. You're not only going to have power over demon-possessed people and over Satan himself, but you're going to, serpent, scorpion, so venom is not going to hurt you, and you're going to have power over all enemies that you encounter. This obviously was extended not only to these 70, but at least to the apostles, including Paul, and Paul is the only example that this ever comes into play. And it is in Acts chapter 26, when Paul has been arrested by the Romans, which now, of course, he demanded to go and see Caesar. So they said, okay, you demanded to go to Caesar, to Caesar you shall go. So, this is on his trip to Rome to go before Caesar. And they shipwreck on this island of Malta. And it's a cold and wet. And natives are all here. They're getting the shipwreck. They're trying to get whatever they can get up here. And they're starting a fire. And so, they have started a fire on the beach. And Paul is gathering wood to throw on the fire. And as he is putting wood on the fire, or maybe on the ground, that's probably more of what it is. It's more of on the ground. And out comes a deadly snake that is native to to this island of Malta. And he bites him on the hand. Bites Paul. And the natives people see this, And they know that there has never been anyone ever survive that has been bitten by this snake, this deadly snake. And then so they just watch him. And at first they're thinking, well, the gods, you escaped this shipwreck. You're a murderer. They knew he was imprisoned by the Romans. And you escaped that, but the gods, it's like karma has come around to get you here. So you should have died there. You didn't. Well, you're going to die here. And when they watched him and he did not die, then they changed their mind instantly and thought, you're a god. You know, these were pagans. Well, then this gave Paul and God, this obviously was the providence of God, but this was the gave Paul an opportunity to tell these people at least he was here for 3 days on this island, initiate about God's kingdom. He, the most powerful man on this island, his dad was sick and I guess dying. And so Paul healed him. And many of the sick of this island, of these natives, came to Paul. He healed them. Now, they were there for 3 days. There's no mention of any baptism. So I'll infer from that that there were none. But what this was, God used this and Paul used this as a foundation laying of the kingdom. These people were pagan. They knew nothing about Jesus. They knew nothing about God's kingdom. They didn't know anything except their idolatrous paganism. That's all they knew. So this introduced and was an icebreaker for them. And I'll assume and I trust that God sent a prophet, an evangelist, a somebody to this island of Malta soon after this, and then spent more time to teach them fully about the gospel. So, but anyway, that is the only example in the Bible that we have of a fulfillment of this verse 19, that serpents will be able to bite you and they will not have, you will not be harmed by any means. Now, how long, who was that given to, and how long did it last? Because we all are familiar with these so-called snake healers or snake handlers. I've heard about them over like in the Appalachian Mountains, Kentucky area and things in these places. I've even seen them on TV and maybe on the internet. And here they're handling rattlesnakes. And somewhere in my lifetime, maybe even in the last 20 years, I even heard that one of these guys got bit and he died. And that number one, none of them is... None of those people, none of us today are who Jesus was talking about that was given this miraculous ability. That's number one. Number two, even if they were, this was a complete misuse of this ability. This is like tempting God and throwing it in God's face, taking this power that is only supposed to be used to promote the gospel. That's exactly how Paul used this power, or God used it through Paul. Boy, it got everyone's attention instantly. And then he was able to promote this message, or that was an icebreaker to do more healings, maybe for someone else to come in and evangelize. But this was not Paul going out there and grabbing this and saying, look at me, look at what I can do. I can be bitten, I can't be hurt. I'm untouchable. That's what these people are supposedly saying, but now anyone that gets bitten, they die. but who was it that would have this power? Well, the most extent that it would have gone to is anyone that had miraculous abilities. We know the only way that anyone ever had any miraculous powers, first, God gave it to the 12. The 70 had it. past that, it would have to be, if Jesus didn't give it to someone directly, like these 70, then after the day of Pentecost, only those that the apostles laid their hands on would have the miraculous powers. And we find that from Acts chapter 8 with Philip and the evangelist going to Samaria, right here with the Samaritans. Okay, so outside of that, and as soon as the, and then we know when the age of the miracles, the miraculous, the spiritual gifts, the miraculous abilities ended, 1 Corinthians 13, when that which is complete or perfect has come, being the New Testament. So once the New Testament was completed by John, the book of Revelation, then all of the spiritual gifts passed away and ended. Okay, so no one past the first century had any of these powers. So it's in ignorance that these people are doing this. And then that's why it's no shock that any time we get a report that one has been bitten, they die. Or have to, you know, it's a snake bite that they're subjected to, though. They're either going to have to get the anti-venom or they're going to lose an arm or something. So, any questions or comments on that? We'll finish up here in this introduction with verse 20. Nevertheless, do not rejoice in this, that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven. So, what is Jesus telling them? Don't become high-minded. Don't become arrogant. Don't think more highly of yourself than you should, because you have these abilities that no one else does. And he's going to refer to this again in verse 24. That you have a special ability that many people all through the past would have longed for and would love to have had and love to have seen the things that you were going to do. But he's telling them, don't let this give you the big head, but instead rejoice that your names are written in heaven. Okay, so Kaufman wrote a few things about the Lamb's Book of Life. And I didn't do any research beyond this. I just went off of what he said. See, he said there are five passages that talk about this Lamb's Book of Life. And from these five passages, you can get four thoughts. So, the five passages are Luke 10, verse 20. Here we are, right here. Philippians 4, 3. Exodus 32, verse 32. Daniel 12, verse 1. And Revelation 13, verse 8. So those five passages, he said, reveal these four statements. Number one, that Christians' names are written in the Book of Life. Number two, the ancient faithful, such as Moses, are also written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Number three, those whose names are not inscribed in it will not be saved. So this is only a list of those that are being saved, and those names who are not listed in it will not be saved. And finally, number four, even though one's name has been written in the Lamb's Book of Life at one time, a name can be blotted out, and for sufficient cause, it will be blotted out. Okay. So, it's not written in indelible ink. It is written in erasable ink or in pencil. And so, depending on the person, the person's behavior and obedience and faithfulness, or the unfaithfulness, they can be written out. So, there are those are the four things about that, that even though one person's name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life, that doesn't mean that it's going to permanently stay there. We have to continually remain righteous, otherwise it will be blotted out. Okay, any questions or comments on that? Then we'll start with verse 21 for our Bible study.